Okay, as we begin here, picking up where we left off last week, and we're in Revelation chapter 21, and let me just begin reading with verse number 1. We'll read down through the first 3 verses or 4 verses to start with. And I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth were passed away, and there was no more sea. And I, John, saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down from God out of heaven, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. We talked about the beauty of that. And I heard a great voice out of heaven saying, "Behold, the tabernacle of God is with men, and he will dwell with them, and they shall be his people, and God himself shall be with them and be their God." So verse number 4, "And God shall wipe away all tears from their eyes. There shall be no more death, neither sorrow, nor crying, neither shall there be any more pain, for the former things are passed away." Why? So this is an exciting time coming up. God will wipe away all the trials of this mortal life, including all our tears, death, sorrow, crying, and pain. Right? And up till this point, when we're actually there with the Lord, now you think about that. For a Christian who, say we're raptured tomorrow or tonight, right? And this New Jerusalem coming down to the earth won't happen for how long? If we were raptured tonight, how long would it be before this took place? 1,007 years. All right. So 1,007 years later, then this will be taking place here. So when does God wipe away the tears from their eyes? I don't know. I mean, he says he'll do it here. So does that mean that before that time, we still are going to be having some tears? I don't have an answer to that question. We will have more immortal bodies, so it would seem like that would have taken place prior to that. Maybe he's just making a statement here that all this is wiped away for all eternity. That's a possibility too. But any thoughts or comments on that?
Well, is that kind of, maybe it's the fact that he's saying he's wiping away all the tears means there will be tears. That's why he's doing it. Otherwise, what's the purpose of doing it? So it's kind of like maybe ends.
But at the same time, you're talking about sorrow and death. There's not going to be death when we're immortal. Will there be crying, sorrow, death? I don't know. I personally kind of think that this is just kind of a recapping of all that will take place for us who know the Lord as our Savior. It sure seems like it would have been earlier than that.
Well, the way I've always seen that specific thing is that it's kind of like the overall condition, because even though God is perfect and he's in a perfect environment, the Bible talks about him experiencing sadness, grief, all of those sort of things. So yet, heaven is not a place of grief and sorrow. So just because, in heaven we can experience those things, it's not a violation of the overall condition of heaven. Because that doesn't describe how life is overall. It doesn't necessarily conflict. Because even God experiences sadness. And he's perfect, and he's in a perfect environment. So to say that the person can't be sad in heaven isn't an accurate statement. But to say that the condition of heaven is a sad state of living, that is not.
Well, that's a good way of looking at it. Yeah. So the bottom line is, we don't know for positive, but he doesn't mention that until right here at this point. That's all we do know for sure. But from this point on, that's the way it'll be. And he says there will be no sin in the New Jerusalem. That's another thing that's great. Chapter 21, verse number 27, the last verse of the chapter. "And there shall in no wise enter into it anything that defileth, neither whatsoever worketh abomination or maketh a lie, but which are written in the Lamb's book of life." Right? So all the things that are sinful and defiled and evil will not be there. And so it almost sounds like he's recapping some of this stuff, but whether it's a recap or whether it's just something that starts at this point, can't be sure. "And there will be no more curse," verse number 3 of chapter 22. All right, 3:22. Garrett, do you want to read that?
"Sure. And there shall be no more curse, but the throne of God and of the Lamb shall be in it, and his servants shall serve him."
Okay, so there's going to be no more curse. And what curse does that talk about? Sin. Okay, curse of sin. Okay, started way back in Genesis. "And there will be no more night," Alright, this is kind of neat. Revelation 21, 25, and then 22, 5. Alright, so, Mel, why don't you read 21, 25, and Garrett, if you want to read 22, 5, since you were right there anyway. So, Mel first.
And the gates of it shall not be shut at all by day, for there shall be no night there.
Okay.
And there shall be no night there, and they need no candle, neither light of the sun, for the Lord giveth them light, and they shall reign forever and ever.
Okay, so the Lord's going to be the light of heaven. That's, you know, it's kind of hard to comprehend, but it's not going to be like right now, the sun, when the sun is in the sky, that is the source of all the light. If the clouds are covering it, like was part of the day today, you don't see the sun. But in heaven, God's everywhere, and so light's going to be everywhere. And so there's not going to be a need for any light like the light of the sun. And Christ will make all things new. 21:5 it says there, and he that sat upon the throne said, Behold, I make all things new. And he said unto me, Write, for these words are true and faithful. So everything's God's got planned is going to be new. And all saints will enjoy the fountain of water of life. Now I said here is not the H2O because he already said that the new world's not going to have any water in it. So exactly what that means, you know, any ideas? You know, if there's not going to be, if the world, you know, he says there that there'll be no more sea. I mean, I guess we can kind of assume that what we know of as H2O water wouldn't be there, but it doesn't necessarily rule it out. It says there's no sea. So any thoughts on that? No, doesn't say, so we'll be guessing anyway. So that's something to think about and ponder. Okay? And then presently, the souls of departed believers are with the Lord in heaven. The resurrection, their souls will be joined to their bodies and made immortal. At that time, the New Jerusalem will become their eternal home. God will bring this heavenly city to this new heaven and new earth that he will create. This will be our eternal home. All right, so we often talk about living forever in heaven. That's technically not true, I suppose. Heaven is with God and where God is. But we will actually be on this new heaven and new earth, this new planet, I guess you could say, that God is going to create. And he's going to bring the New Jerusalem down from the present heaven to that new earth that he's creating. And we will be there with God for all eternity. All right, so that's quite an interesting thought to ponder on. There's lots to think about there. And the New Jerusalem is our new, the eternal home for the immortal believers. Either by rapture or resurrection, saints will enter into this New Jerusalem. So what I mean by that, by rapture or revelation, if we're alive and the Lord comes back tonight, then we will enter that by rapture. We won't have actually died. But all those who have already died will be resurrected. And so it's one or the other. All right, and then the commencement of the New Jerusalem is already stated. It is probable that during the millennium, the New Jerusalem will hover over the earth as a satellite to be the home of the immortal saints who reign with Christ. Compare Isaiah 65:17. Let's just take a look at some of these verses here in Isaiah because it is quite important that we have something here to ponder. Isaiah 65:17. Okay, 65:17 says, For behold, I create new heavens and a new earth, and the former shall not be remembered nor come into mind. Alright, and then in chapter 66, verse 22, page over, 66:22, For as the new heaven and the new earth, which I will make, shall remain before me, saith the Lord, so shall your seed and your name remain. Right, so once again, he's just talking about this new Jerusalem. Now, here in Isaiah, he was talking...
Yeah. What does that mean? In the Old Testament, when God talks about your seed, he's talking about people that are going to come after them.
Okay.
Are they saying that we are going to have children up there?
No. All right, so remember, he's writing here to people of Israel that were alive at the time. And none of this had taken place. This is all future. So as he was writing...
He's talking about the new heavens. That means, must mean
the yes,
heaven that God is creating.
Yes, but he's assuming it'd be like me saying to you, all right, this is in present tense, as for the new heavens and the new earth, which I will make, they shall remain before me, saith the Lord, so shall your seed and your name remain.
Oh, I see.
So he was talking to them in the present tense, and the fact that your seed and your, the way that it is written here, could refer to your aunt, your relatives or your offspring, not necessarily you're going to keep having babies.
No.
It's just your family. He could have said it this way, so shall your family and your name.
Before the new heavens and the new earth.
Right. So here in Isaiah, he seems to be talking about the millennium. And over in Revelation, he's talking about the eternal state. And I've often wondered, you know, what is God going to do, I mean, to this messed up earth for the millennium? You know, and is it possible? And I mean, that's only throwing it out as a guess. Is it possible that God's going to create a new earth twice? I don't think so, but, you know, if he's creating this new earth here for the millennium, well, then after the millennium, there's going to be a lot of problems. There's going to be fire coming down from heaven. There's going to be, you know, so I don't know. Something to think about, Jenner.
Kind of more seems like one is just a major restoration and another one is a complete rebuild.
Well, that's what I've always assumed, that the millennium was a major restoration. Whereas the new Jerusalem in the earth, sorry, the new heaven and new earth at the end is brand new. The old one's melted down, got a brand new. Yes.
Oh yeah. So the verses where it says he'll melt the earth from fervent heat, is that talking about after the millennium or is it before?
I believe it's after. 2 Peter chapter 3 and verse number 10. Yes, I would say after. I don't know that the context here necessarily tells us, but 2 Peter 3:10, but the day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night, in which the heavens shall pass away with a great noise, and the elements shall melt with fervent heat, the earth and the works, all the earth and the works that are therein shall be burned up. Seeing then all these things shall be dissolved, what manner of persons ought ye to be in all holy conversation and godliness, looking for and hastening unto the coming day of God, wherein the heavens being on fire shall be dissolved and the elements shall melt with fervent heat. Right, so, and then next verse here, nevertheless, we, according to his promise, look for a new heavens and a new earth wherein dwelleth righteousness. So,
yeah.
Kind of helps to put it in the context. All right, other thoughts before we move on? As the saints enter the New Jerusalem, when they become immortal, as the saints enter the New Jerusalem when they become immortal, it should be then instead of then they will enjoy the awesomeness of that home described in Revelation 22:1-22. From that point onward, for all eternity. That was kind of an awkward sentence. I'm sorry about that. You're just saying that once we get there, we're going to enjoy this for all eternity. All right. Now, the locale of the city may be changed from the heaven to hover over the millennial earth, then come down to the earth, but the inhabitants will undergo no change whatsoever. All right. So The reason I speculate, and several others speculate, that the New Jerusalem may hover over the earth during the millennium is because we got to be somewhere. We're not going to be living on this earth. We're not going to be intermingling with the people on the earth. We're not going to be, we're not going to be walking around living with them because we're going to be immortal. They're going to be mortals. And so for an immortal to be living around with the mortals, that doesn't work. All right. So whether we're just here in presence and maybe we'll have some kind of our immortal bodies will be like Christ, and you could see his body, so I don't imagine we're going to be just, invisible spirits. I couldn't say that. So we're going to be working for the Lord during that time. So a lot of people speculate that maybe this New Jerusalem, which is our heavenly home, will come down and hover over like a satellite around the earth. And from there, we'll kind of go back and forth and help the Lord with whatever work he wants us to do in reigning over the earth during the millennium. But there's an awful lot of unanswered questions in some of this because we just aren't told all the details. And so therefore, we need to be careful not to go off on some wild chase on guessing something that God hasn't told us. Right? And this New Jerusalem will reflect the glory of God. 21:11. Right. Right. Having the glory of God, and her light was like unto the stone most precious, even like jasper stone, clear as crystal. And then it will have a great wall around it. I'm not going to read all this because it's got a whole bunch of names and gates and all that kind of stuff. From verse number 12, I'll just read part of it here. And it had a wall great and high, and 12 gates. And at the gates were 12 angels, and the names written thereon, which were the names of the 12 tribes of the children of Israel. And on the east side, and then it goes through the different gates that were there. Okay, so it had a great wall around it. And this wall, this may be the thickness, verse number 17. And the measure of the wall thereof was 144 cubits, according to the measure of a man, that is, of the angel. Right, now, is that talking about the height of the wall? That doesn't seem very likely, because the city itself is much, much higher than that. So some speculate that it may be the thickness of the wall. I don't know. Any thoughts on that? All right, so he talks about the measure of the wall. Doesn't say whether it's the measure of the height or the measure of the width. But it's something for you to chew on while you're trying to go to sleep tonight. All right. It will have 12 gates on each side. On each one of them will be the name of one of the tribes of Israel. And then the city will be a huge cube, 2,500 kilometer cube. All right, look at verse number 16. And the city lieth foursquare. The length is as large as the breadth. And he measured the city with a reed 12,000 furlongs. And that works out to be about 2,500 kilometers. The length and breadth and height of it were equal. All right, so the length of it, the breadth of it, and the height of it are equal. Some people speculate it might be a pyramid, because that could also be that height, but it doesn't say that, so it may just be a cube. And the good thing to remember is immortal beings are not limited to the three dimensions that we are now. So right now, we only walk on one plane, where then we're immortal. Because it's that high, I mean, we can enjoy all of it at the same time. It's hard for our pea brains to figure that kind of things out. But there's a lot there that the Lord has for us. And, thinking of it being that tall, I mean, think about how many people you could get in something of a cube of 2,500 kilometers cube. You get an awful lot of people in that. So, and especially if we're on all...
It's just the city of the New Jerusalem, isn't it? Wow.
Yep. And the city will be built of transparent gold. That boggles the brain, too. Verse number 18, the building of the wall of it shall is as jasper, and the city it was pure gold, like unto crystal glass. Like unto clear glass. All right, so gold that is so pure that it's clear, and all the gold we've ever seen is gold.
Yeah, it's solid.
Yeah, so it's not open.
Certainly can't see through it.
Yes, and the foundations of the city will be of beautiful gems. And I'm not even going to try to say all these names of these gems here. They got all kinds of names here: sapphire and all these other ones. So too hard to pronounce. But he's got the whole list of them there, of the gems that will be made up of in the foundations. I know each of the gates are made up of a huge pearl. Yeah. That's interesting. Verse number 21, and the 12 gates were 12 pearls. Every several gate, word several, that means individual. Every individual gate was of one pearl. And the street was of pure gold, as it was transparent gold, or glass. So every gate, you know, just one gigantic pearl, apparently with a hole through the middle of it, and you walk through the gate that way. And the street was of transparent, pure gold, and there will be no more temple. Verse number 22. Mm-hmm. Right, and I saw no temple therein, for the Lord God Almighty and the Lamb are the temple of it. Right. So that indicates that the temple that they had in Solomon's day was a picture and reflection in a sort of God. And that's why Solomon made it so beautiful. It was a magnificent building. But it was a reflection of at least the character of God. Obviously, God's not a big old building. Of the Solomon's temple? No. No.
Possibly.
Of the temple?
I believe so.
I don't know. I assumed that the wall of the city's there. As far as I know, the temple was completely destroyed. But some of the stones of the temple were huge. You know, it make you wonder how they moved them there. You know, and they got some of them from way up in Lebanon.
Well, I've actually stood outside the pyramid, one of the pyramids in Egypt, and you should see the size of those stones. How on earth did they get them right up the top? And it's wire. Absolutely massive. Rutgers.
Yep.
And yet they made them over 2,000 years ago.
I know. God gave them some wisdom that we don't have. They knew stuff we don't know. There will be no sun and moon there. We already saw that. The Lord will be the light of the city. And there will be a pure river of water of life. Verse 1 of the second. Well, some kind of water. Whether it's H2O or not, I don't know. Well, I know it says that it's a water. Oh, it says, and he showed me a pure river of water of life, clear as crystal, proceeding out of the throne of God and of the Lamb. So whether that water is the kind of water we're used to, or whether it's some new kind of water, that's only a guess.
It kind of reminds me a little bit of the fruit of the knowledge of good and evil, right? Even though, yes, it might have looked like some kind of fruit, it's added more to it. And maybe that might not necessarily be water, but it has, like he says, he calls it not just water, but the water of life. So it could even represent something. We wouldn't know.
Yeah. A lot of things that are left for our discovery. Yes, John.
Well, they're talking here of the tree of life. A tree needs water to grow.
This is probably, and
it grows fruit every month.
Completely irrelevant, probably, but just a lot of people don't know there are actually multiple types of H2O. I mean, you get one of the different hydrogen isotopes, and it's called heavy water. It's actually key, mainly used in like radioactive research, but you know, it's literally water, but it's just 2 times as heavy. So there's more types of water than just what we have, but a lot of people don't even know that.
But I mean, even like you mentioned the water needed for the tree to grow. That's assuming that the trees are like the trees we're used to. There's so many things we just don't know. I mean, is there going to be oxygen like there is here? I mean, the trees are going to need oxygen. They're going to, you know, the nutrients in the ground. we are just assuming based on what we know now. But God may have something completely different that will be far more beautiful than we've ever dreamed that would be then. So John's just writing what he can see, and I'm not saying that he was just making guesses, but at the same time, all through the Bible, people, especially the prophetic books, they describe things based on their knowledge. And, you know, they even like in Revelation there, when it talks about all these, you know, the battles and stuff, they talk about horses and stuff of that nature. Well, it's possible there's going to be horses during those battles, but nobody uses horses today for the most part. You don't go against some, you know, atomic bomb with a horse. So, you know, maybe he was just describing things the best he knew from his own experience. Because, I mean, if you tried, I mean, you think about it, in Bible days, if John would have seen an atomic explosion, how would he describe that?
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing in the brain that even equates with that to try to explain it. So he would have had to come up with something that resembled what he saw in order to help us to understand what it was. So there's still a lot of things that we don't know.
Horse people in the tribulation. Like,
yeah.
Who knows if the actual horses they're riding on? You know,
they have actual colors.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that we just don't know that God's going to show us in time to come. Yeah. Oh, Ezekiel's got some crazy things. You know, you read that and all the different wheels and wheels inside of a wheel and the turn. And, you know, every time I read that, I think, oh, boy, I don't get that at all. So, all right, then the throne of God will be there, 22:3. And there should be no more curse, and the throne of God and the Lamb will be shall be in it, and the servants shall serve Him. All right, so we're going to be there to serve the Lord during that time. All right, so a little bit of review. What is the second heaven? Okay, that's where the stars are, outer space. And when will God destroy this present earth? As far as we know.
In his own good time.
Yeah. All right, after the millennium, at the final judgment there, okay? And what is unique about the new earth? There's no more sea.
No sea.
Okay.
No dark. I can't imagine that.
Yeah. Well, the new earth, says that it has no sea. The new Jerusalem is the one. Yes, yeah, and then when that all comes down, and I mean, even then, the new earth, I mean, will, that's another something to think about. I mean, if God's in the new Jerusalem, and if God saw fit to have the new Jerusalem hovering over even the new earth, would God then be the light that would lighten the whole new earth, and the new earth would rotate on an axis as well, and that there'd be night? There's not going to be any night and day, so it's going to be light all the time.
So even say that the earth is going to be round,
anyway. Well, I guess that.
Years ago.
You get a point, all right. And what is the new Jerusalem? All right, we were just talking about that. The city that God's bringing down from heaven.
Yeah.
And then name some of the unique qualities of the New Jerusalem. We just talked about a whole bunch of them here. The
gold glass.
Yeah, gold and the gems and the pearl gates. And the,
there will be no sun and no moon.
God will be the light of everything.
God will light everything. And
no more death and sorrow, crying and all those bad things. Mm-hmm. Lots and lots of good things. All right, one last question. We've kind of talked about it anyway, but it's something for us to ponder. Why do you think God is creating all these things for those who place their faith in Him? Why would God do that?
Because He promised it.
Yeah. Why did He promise it? I'm not saying there's a solid answer for this. I'm just throwing out here.
Well, not a partial answer. Maybe because that is where God wants to dwell, but we get to dwell with Him. Hence why we kind of get what He has.
Okay.
If that's His, we become part of that.
In my mind, I'm thinking that it's because He loves us. He's a God of love. You know, you read throughout the Scriptures that He's a kind, loving God and a God of love, and He rejoices in us, and He loves us. And so therefore He's creating all these things for us because He loves us and He wants to be with us. And He wants to have us there to dwell with Him and to be able to live on this new earth. I mean, He doesn't need that new earth. I mean, He's doing that for our benefit because He's self-existent in Himself. He doesn't need any of us to exist and to be happy. But yet we are there to be a blessing to Him, to serve Him. And He just loves us. And it's good to remember that God genuinely does love us.